What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sharpen your pencils and get your notebooks out. It's time for the Star Seminar. And now, here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Danny Fenton.
Welcome, faithful listeners, to another edition of the Star Seminar. But this week, we are not broadcasting from the classroom. You do not have to take notes. We are not expecting you to open your laptops. And there will be no test because, sadly, this semester is over. So this is actually the faculty lounge. We have a couple of old guys here sitting in the faculty lounge having a couple cold ones, and we're going to talk about what happened this semester. And with me, as always, to engender that discussion is the great Professor Emeritus, the chair of our football faculty, Dr. Danny Fenton. How are you, sir?
I am doing great. You know, actually, you know, lounge is perfect because that's kind of what I'm going to do now. It's whenever the Cowboys season ends, basically football just dies for me. I mean, don't get me wrong, there I will have interest in this weekend's game and the Super Bowl, of course, but all the life has just been taken away from my football interest, and it just kind of changes my life, really. I mean, I obviously with writing, it's a different kind of thing now. So we don't have a process of, you know, there's a game and we got to talk about the game and then talk about the upcoming game. So there's really no, that schedule's kind of gone. There's kind of just the freedom to just talk, write about whatever you want. So it's just a different, for me, it's just kind of a different kind of life. As you know, I spend a little more time with my family, which is, you know, weird, and you know that it takes not having football to do that. But I don't know. I find that kind of a weird time for me. I don't know if it's any different for you, Rabs. Is it when the Cowboys are done, does your life change at all?
That's a great question. I don't know that it changes a lot. I will say that I have a lot more time on the weekends. There's more time to spend with my wife. And that's definitely a good thing. We are actually planning a trip, as I think I've talked to you about. We're going to go to Portugal and to Morocco in February. And we were actually, I didn't even realize this when we got the tickets, we were scheduled to fly out and are scheduled to fly out on Super Bowl Sunday. If the Cowboys had made the Super Bowl, I would have been in quite
my pickle, goodness. My friend.
I know. But so that didn't happen. And I'm relieved that it didn't for that reason, not for other reasons. But I think you're right that there is a certain rhythm to the week when we're in season. But I also will say that, you know, my favorite time of year is always the off season. And I think it's just because I love the roster building process. And I think it's even some ways more exciting because in the free agent era, there's always so much turnover and it's such a difficult process. And there's the decisions you have to make are that much tougher. You can't just re-sign all your guys like they could have in the old days. And so, you know, in some ways, it's a bummer that the season is over. Absolutely, but I'm looking forward to a little bit of a hiatus, and then I'm looking forward to getting back. And I will say that these days, and we're going to talk about this more today, I think. But these days, when the Cowboys lose, because my expectations are different than they are for example, those '90s teams, or even frankly for the teams in 2007 or 2014. It's a combination of disappointment, but it's also in some ways a relief because it's just over. All the just the all the noise is reduced a little bit. So if anything, it might be that my life just gets a little quieter.
Yeah, it's interesting that you have that approach. I'm with you a little bit in the sense of like I am at peace. Going into a game, I know understand that the other team is trying really hard too, and that we're guaranteed nothing, and so I'm definitely prepared to not win. But at the same time, I don't know. I just can't escape the disappointment, and it's like, why can't it be us? And it's like all this time. I felt like we've had good teams, but just we can't get past the divisional round. So there's still that extra frustration that just shows up, even though, I try to prepare myself. So it's odd. But I'm with you. I absolutely love off season. I mean, I'm looking forward to some of the things that I get to explore now as we look, as we have the time between the draft and everything. And so that's going to be fun. But I know that this show is a time for reflection, and so why don't you just tell everybody what's going on today?
Well, we're going to play a little game of Let Me Ask You, and each of us has prepared some questions for the other, and we're just going to ask each other some questions here about the season, about the playoff exit, and about maybe like what we have on the horizon. So I'm going to jump in and start. I actually have four questions for you, and you have three questions for me. And so the first question I have for you is, since this is still fairly fresh, if anything, did the San Francisco game tell you something about the Dallas Cowboys, the 2022 Dallas Cowboys? Was there a lesson to be learned from that game?
I think for me, and I've said this before, so I don't know if it's as much as something I've learned as much as I have just been solidified, but for me it's all about the Dak. It's all about the Cowboys are going to live and die by the performance of Prescott. And I know that seems like a harsh thing to say, but this is really just, you could apply that to basically any team. There are other teams that are a little bit more equipped to where they're not so QB depending. You might say that the 49ers are one of those teams, but even if Brock Purdy doesn't play well, he played well. I mean, you're not going to win. You need that from your quarterback. But for me, I think it taught me as we go through all this. Everyone was thought that with Jason Garrett gone, that's our problems are going to be over, and people like McCarthy, and McCarthy's grown on me too. I've liked some of the things he's done too. I'm not at all one of those that want to get rid of McCarthy. But I mean, what has really changed, with this Cowboys team? For me, I don't think there's much. I really think that the Cowboys are very fortunate to have two great quarterbacks that they lucked into, so to speak. But at the same time, they're not so great, not so lucky in the sense of their quarterbacks have not played outstanding when it matters. And then come playoff time, that's what you need. So to me, it's the lesson I've learned is, We're gonna keep reliving this, and nothing is going to change unless they have a quarterback that plays well when it counts. So that's what I've learned this season. Well, what about you?
That's a good one. I guess I'm sort of the notion that I'm not sure there's any quarterback that is capable of elevating his teammates. I mean, sure, there are some quarterbacks who are better, but, a great counter argument to this, you could be found in someone like Joe Burrow last year, where he was getting sacked right and left, but still managed to guide the Bengals to the cusp of a Super Bowl championship and definitely to the big game. But I feel like every quarterback who's successful has a plethora of weapons. And I think the other thing, and this is the thing that I was going to say that the San Francisco game taught me both last year and this year, is how important it is to invest in toughness along the offensive and defensive lines. I think the Cowboys had a more resilient team this year than they did last year. I thought that was particularly true in the defensive front seven. I really appreciated how resilient they were on a play-to-play basis and also how physical and tough they were. And the Cowboys earlier in the year, it looked like their offensive line was starting to get a little bit of toughness and starting to do better in the running game. And then Terrence Steele went out and that just went right out the window. And so the right side of the Cowboys offensive line is pretty tough, pretty physical. I think that their first round draft pick, you know, our good friend Tyler Smith is a pretty physical dude, certainly in the run game, but they're missing physicality elsewhere. And I don't know. I think that if I look back to something like 2014, and there was a similar narrative going around in 2014 that we heard circulating around the 49ers this year, which is the record of teams the week after they played the Cowboys. In 2014, teams after they played the Cowboys had maybe one or two wins all season, because the thesis was, I mean, it could be the Cowboys were just beating a lot of bad teams that were going to lose again anyway. But I think the thesis was that playing the Cowboys offensive line, and their defense was very physical too. You get beat up. You really get beat up. And it's been a while since the Cowboys have had that kind of identity. And I do think it makes a difference in games like this. They're, you know, the teams that are left, let's look at the teams that are left. You got Philadelphia and San Francisco. Both of those have a kind of philosophical or an organizational philosophy, let me put it that way, to build along the lines, to reinforce the lines, and to get tough physical guys on their lines. And I think the Cowboys just got out physical on both lines. I really do. And I think that they did both years against San Francisco. San Francisco is really strong along both of those offensive and defensive lines. I will say one other thing about the game. I don't know that we've learned yet, but I suspect we may learn, which is that we lost to a very close game against the best team in the NFC. You know, so I think people are all up in arms now about, oh, woe is me. Oh, Dak's this. Oh, Dak's that. Yeah, Dak threw a couple of interceptions, but Dak threw a couple of interceptions against the best defense in the league. Mm-hmm. That's particularly good in the areas, you know, certainly where he threw his second interception. I mean, like if you remember, the difference between the Cowboys defense in 2017 and 2018 was largely, that's when they drafted Leighton Vander Esch, but also Jalen Smith had his most miraculous year, in which he actually started to have some recovery speed. And suddenly the Cowboys were way better at those underneath zones. Like, so when they would play an underneath zone, they were closing on the ball. They were breaking passes up in ways that they simply weren't the year before. And their defense the year before was terrible. And then suddenly they were good. And it was largely just because they had a lot more speed at linebacker. So when those guys were dropping, they were covering a lot more ground. And nobody covers more ground as underneath zones than the 49ers, because it's not only the linebackers, but you've got Tufunga. You've got their safety who was
Jimmy
like a
Ward. First-round draft.
Yeah, thank you. You got Ward. I mean, you've got a lot of athletes. You know, a lot of long guys, a lot of athletes playing underneath, and they're really hard to move the ball against. And their front four is so good that you don't get a lot of opportunities to throw over. And so, I mean, they're going to squeeze Philadelphia too. I mean, Philadelphia could route them. It's possible, right? But I think that it may be that after watching them play Philadelphia, we say, oh, okay. I mean, we went toe-to-toe against a team that just went into Philadelphia and made that great Eagles offense look pretty limited, because they do that to everybody.
Yeah, you know,
that's my take on
it. I agree, and I think what makes it harder too is I feel like I know we lost to a really good football team, but the Cowboys also were a good football team, and you know, yep. We get in these situations, you know, where we have good seasons, and you know, we have these high expectations, and then they don't deliver. And you know, I think one of the things that makes it hard for me is just dealing with this disappointment. And I wanted to ask you is, you know, if you look at the way the season went down and everything that was going right for the Cowboys, mm-hmm. you know, you look at the NFC in itself, it was, you know, outside of San Francisco and Philadelphia, not really much to be scared of, which, you know, maybe aided in the fact that we finally got, you know, we beat Tom Brady in the wild card and advanced. You know, the Cowboys have both their coordinators, you know, on staff, which it sounds like that's going to be the case next season too, as it looks like we'll be able to keep both of those as we're hearing more things. You know, you got your both running backs, which who knows what's going to happen there. We may not have either of them. Certainly we're not going to have both. Dalton Schultz, you know, he's probably likely to go. There's a lot of key starters that who aren't likely to be here next year. So What I wanted to throw at you is I want to just take a look at, like, did we squander an opportunity? So let me ask you this. Did the Cowboys miss their chance? What are their chances of being in the playoff next year and having another run at it?
I think their chances are excellent. I don't see that they're losing anybody who is going to be a major factor other than potentially Pollard. I do think the other thing that we learned against San Francisco is that the 49ers did not fear Dalton Schultz at all. And I think that Dalton Schultz is a really nice piece, but he's not a great blocker and he's not dynamic. He's not the dynamic guy of the team. He makes a lot of plays. And I think he's a smart player. He's done a lot to maximize his own athletic ability, which does come with some very real athletic limitations. And so I'll answer your question this way. I don't feel like, oh my goodness, look at next year that the roster is going to be significantly imperiled. I think that this happens every year. Like we lost Randy Gregory. We lost, Amari Cooper. I mean, it's going to be hard for them to lose players who made that level of contribution again this year. I don't think that they will. So I think that it's possible that we feel they squandered an opportunity more so than they do. And I think the opportunity is this. I think that as fans for a good part of the middle of the season, at least certainly up until the Jacksonville game, I think we were continuing to sort of scoreboard watch in the hopes that the Cowboys could catch the Eagles and somehow, even if they just tied them, win the NFC East, get a first round bye or if not a first round bye, get, home games all the way through or at least until the NFC Championship game or something like that, right? I think we imagined that that was a possibility. I felt like it was really instructive when we had Landon McCool on a couple of weeks ago before the 49ers game. Actually, just last week before the 49ers game. It's been a busy week. It feels like a lot longer than that. And he was sort of saying, it's possible the Green Bay game was really the turning point for them where they realized, listen, this Philadelphia team is not going to continue to, they're not going to blow it this that enough times to get us back in it, even if we do beat them. And so, so I think, I don't know that the team felt that that was an opportunity that was squandered. And so I'm not sure that we should feel it was either, because I think they probably have a more realistic view of it than we do. So that said, and let me just put that aside for a second. I feel like when you squander an opportunity, it's when you are a good enough team to make the playoffs, a good enough team even to make a decent, potentially a playoff run. I mean, you never know, but you could make a playoff run and you don't make the playoffs. That's when you squander the opportunity. So I feel like if I look back over the last few years of Cowboys football, the one year where I really see a squandered opportunity is 2019. That team was much better than the Eagles. They were clearly the best team in the NFC East. And the fact that they went into Philadelphia and there was so much internal divisiveness and the coaches and players were at odds, their heads were elsewhere. The whole second half of the season, they just kept losing embarrassing fashion week after week. The Jason Garrett tenure with the team, he had lost the team clearly. And I feel like that was a squandered opportunity because that team should have won the NFC East handily, by the way, and had a home game in the playoffs. And who knows what would have happened? Like once you get in the tournament, it's, you can't say any opportunity is squandered, but missing in the playoffs, I think, is a squandered opportunity. So I would say no. And I think they have every chance of getting back. They have a really good roster. They're a young team. They have enough young guys who are going to get better because young players do get better. They have continuity, which is huge. As you were just saying, it looks like they're going to have the coordinators back. It looks like they're going to have their head coach back, obviously. So philosophically, they should be able to build on what they build on rather than having to reteach from the beginning. And so that means they can teach more nuanced things. The guys can continue to practice what they already know and get better at it. And I mean, listen, the Cowboys are due for a stinker of a draft, because they've had three really strong drafts in a row. you can make, you know, you can talk about certain picks, but the reality is they've had three really strong drafts in a row, and that's why they're a good team. They're a good young team because of that, and they might have a stinker, but I trust that this front office is really good at identifying college talent, and they're going to bring on some more talented guys. They're going to be a good deep roster for a long time. Whether they'll ever be great, I don't know, but I think they're going to be good for a long time. So my answer is no. I don't think at all that they squandered an opportunity. I think that, yeah, I mean, you get to the tournament and then you do your best. And that's what they did. They played. Listen, I think to go back to what we said earlier about the San Francisco game, I think we're going to look back on this and say they played two really good games against they played a great game against Tampa Bay, and they played a really strong game against San Francisco. And we're just, because San Francisco doesn't have a quarterback that people know about, everyone thinks they suck. They are really good, and they are deep and talented and tough and incredibly well coached on both offense and defense, and more talented than the Cowboys at many, many positions other than quarterback. And that showed. And so I you know, they may lose to Philadelphia. It's in Philly, you know, who knows, but they're really good. And I think people are sleeping on them and forgetting how good they are.
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything that you said there. I one thing I did want to mention though quickly is, and when, why I feel like there might be a little bit of a squander here, and it's this, and you actually kind of, you know, teased a little bit, is, you know, they are due for a stinker of the draft, and to me what worries me a little bit is if the Cowboys, obviously, you know, the parity of the NFL is a real thing. We know that there's turnover, teams don't always make it in. The Cowboys were one of the lucky ones to repeat, which is something we haven't done, you know, ourselves in a long time. So then to think three in a row, I know that how the NFL works in that regard. So I know it's certainly going to be hard. But then if you throw in on top of that, they have to work with a quarterback that makes a lot of money. And we know how the front office works too. They're going to budget within that. So they're going to make moves like that. So we're going to see a lot more low cost, you know, purchases. And, you know, we talk about good drafts. I think this is their second straight outstanding, you know, low-cost free agent haul that they've done. Because
yes, 100%.
I thought they were fantastic. And, I mean, it makes me optimistic that they can – that's something that's repeatable because they've repeated it. But I do think you might – I start to wonder, like, when is our luck going to run it? When is some of our decisions that we make not going to work out so well? And then we put ourselves in situations when the roster is a little bit lacking. And that's what makes me a little bit concerned about 2023, is like, I think there's some work to be done, and the Cowboys are going to really need to deliver again for us to, you know, have another shot at this. So I'm a little worried about that.
I think we're going to, I have a question for you for a little bit later about that, but, you know, when you were just talking, you were talking about, you know, the fact that they could have a stinker of a draft, the fact that they don't like to, you know, invest a lot in free agency, et cetera. You're talking about the, you know, that they like to balance the budget, et cetera. And that brought to mind one of the other questions I have for you. So let me ask that one now, and then we can talk a little bit more about hopes and fears going forward. And that's that, and this could be something in the front office, it could be something on the field, it could be something schematic. This is broadly conceived, but if you had the power to change one core philosophical tenet of the Dallas Cowboys, what would it be?
Oh, so does that include ownership interference?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It can be anything. I mean, I think that we've been following this team for a long time. They're actually a very consistent team in terms of their behavior. Like, we know what they believe in. So from that list of beliefs, what's the one you'd like to pluck out and replace it with a different belief?
So this is difficult because I don't know how to get to this point, but one of the things that bothers me, and it's bothered me for a long time, is because of the Joneses. You know, they own Jerry owns his team. He's going to be a part of it. And I understand that's a given. We have to work within that. But the thing that I wish we could somehow get away with is having some type of leadership that can kind of sway Jerry from wanting certain things. Like to, for me, all, one of my complaints this year, and I love Ezekiel Elliott, but I feel like the Cowboys, like, well, we bought this, so we got to use this. And I thought there was too many times that the Cowboys did not get the best out of their offense because they were overly committed to Elliott. Elliott should have been a side, you know, a kick to Tony Pollard. There's no reason that he should have been playing, you know, to the as more snaps, you know, and as much involved in the offense as he did. To me, that was just a complete, just blatant poor football. I don't know if you want to put that on Mike McCarthy or Kellen Moore or whoever, but that's what the Cowboys did. And I feel like the reason they did that is because this is coming from, you know, coming down. This is what they're supposed to do. I don't think McCarthy has had the tenureship to be able to step in and override that at this point. I think he's slowly trying to earn his power, so to speak. I feel like Garrett's a good example. I thought Garrett was fantastic at convincing the Joneses that they want to do something different. So that's what I thought was what Jason Garrett's one of his gifts was. He knew he had to work with those guys, but I think he did a good job of persuading. I think McCarthy is not at that point yet where I think he's more still trying to, he's got to work with those guys.
You gotta earn their
He's got to
trust.
earn their trust. Yeah. So to me, I feel like there's just an imbalance of power in some of the decisions that goes on. And like, and I think Michael Gallup's another kind of thing. It's like they just kind of said, you know, we understand what's going to happen. But we're going to just try to make it work. And that's what they tried to make it work. And I feel like if you had someone who is able to say, come in and say, no, this is unreasonable what you're asking, or this is not working. We tried it, it's not working. I feel like the Cowboys would be more successful. So I would like to see them kind of tweak some of their decision makings and how they approach their team and put who they put out on the field and who they give the ball to, based on actual what's going to benefit the team on the field and not trickling down from management and how we're choosing to run our football team.
So I think the thing about that is we don't have any evidence that that's trickling down from management. It just seems like it must be because it's stupid, right?
Well, true, except that we've seen some behind the scenes where, you know, you see McCarthy over there talking to Stephen Jones, is like, you know, about Zeke, you know, we're gonna wear him out, right? You know, and you see these little things. You're right. We don't have any concrete evidence, but I think we can
So
kind of.
let me just be devil's advocate for a second on the one about Zeke, because if you think about it, one of the things that McCarthy does really well, in the last couple of years, this hasn't manifest all the way because it does feel like the Cowboys have kind of tailed off at the end of the season. But I think the one of the things he has done, he professes that it's an important tenet of his coaching philosophy, and he's done a good job with it, which is to get the team to the playoffs healthy. If you're a coaching staff and you look at your running back room, who's the dynamic guy you've got to make sure is healthy at the end?
Tony Pollard.
It's Pollard.
Yeah.
Obviously, right? And so how do you get Pollard to the last game of the season or into the first game of the playoffs healthy? You limit his carries. Who are you going to limit his carries with?
Malik Davis.
No, because Malik Davis is still learning. Malik Davis has shown that, like, on third and three, he's not going to block the right
Right.
guy.
No, I know.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, Malik Davis is great in mop-up duty. You give him some opportunities. So I think the thing about that is, Zeke, and I believe strongly that they ran Zeke out there to preserve Tony Pollard for when it mattered. They learned very early on. I mean, remember against LA, you know, Tony Pollard took that one run up the middle. Boop, he was gone. Zeke can't do that. And that's a, I mean, and the only other guy who can do that, as we saw against San Francisco, is CeeDee Lamb, the only other dynamic cat they have. So I don't know. I sort of feel like the fact that the Zeke decision, you know, there's a series of bad decisions on Zeke, but they go back to 2014 when they drafted him. But I feel like sometimes they do stupid things because there's a long-term goal in mind.
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
But no, but I will say that I think what you said is absolutely spot on, and it's the one thing that could change the Cowboys the most going forward, right? Is that is that if they had someone who was the face of the team, who was the head coach, like they did with Bill Parcells. I mean, people talk about Bill Parcells and Jimmy Johnson, but the reality is the buck stopped with them. And ever since then, everybody knows the buck does not stop with the head coach. It stops with the Joneses, and the Joneses like it that way. And, Jerry's very famous for saying when Bill Parcells left, good, now we can have fun again.
Yeah.
And he sees working with a coach where that coach is the sort of like doorstop, so to speak, that figure, that that it's not fun. He doesn't want to do it, and they don't want to do it. And I think as a result, there's a kind of lack of accountability that permeates through the culture, and it permeates all the way down into the locker room. And because the Joneses don't want to be accountable, and therefore accountability is not one of those things that they feel like they want to push, hold forth as a value, enforce whatever it is. So I agree. I would say on top of that, I think the other place where I think the Cowboys are philosophically, there's a couple things, but I'm just going to choose one. Philosophically, I would love to see them sort of come into the 21st century is in the way they value third day draft picks. I think there's a lot of other organizations that see that third day draft picks are a gamble. You're bringing in a guy, you don't have a whole lot of faith in his ability. You hope, right? But you're betting on traits, you're betting on work ethic, you're betting on something because they don't have the whole package. If they had the whole package, they'd be a top 100 pick. So, I mean, think about this. What's the better gamble? You spend a fifth round pick on a guy from Boise State who's got, speed but missed a bunch of games, or is a slow guy, but he's a really smart guy and he's a leader in the locker room, whatever. Or do you spend it on a guy who has made plays in the NFL, but is either a little bit dinged or, is a little bit over the hill or, there's something going on, but he can handle the rigors and the reality of the NFL, which you don't know that kid from Boise State can. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but you've seen him develop traits that help him win in the NFL. So you know how he can win. So if you want to add a certain way of winning to your roster, you can do that. And you were just talking about, what they did with their sort of inexpensive free agent hauls the last couple of years. I believe strongly that one of the reasons that Mike McCarthy's team has made the playoffs the last couple of years and been, 12-5 or 24-10 in the last 2 years, that's pretty impressive. Last time the Cowboys won 12 games back-to-back, I think, was the 90s. It was the 90s Cowboys in like 94 and 95, right?
I think so.
So, is not only that he gets out of the way and lets the scouts do their things. I think Will McClay and his guys, his team are really good. But also, I think he does a good job of communicating the traits that he wants. And I think Dan Quinn does a really good job of this as well. So that when they bring free agents in, they have an idea that trait will fit into what we're trying to do. And we know how that guy can win within our scheme. And that fits the way that our scheme is going to be working with all the other parts. And so, the one thing that they don't do, the Cowboys don't do, is readily trade day three assets for guys like that, right? So not only do you get to pick them up by a free agency, but there's another way you can get them. You can trade for them and get their cheap contracts. And the Cowboys don't want to do that because they believe so much in drafting. And I think they're a little full of themselves about their ability to draft. Rightly so, but I would like to see them change that.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with that, even though I will I always advocate for the Cowboys front office because I think they do such a fantastic job.
100%. I think this is a small thing, but I wish they did that too because they're so good at everything else. If they did that, man, how much would that help?
Right, yeah. And so absolutely. I mean, and you're right. Also, there's a lot of numbers that shows just those day threes don't produce. You go out there and get a proven thing, then that's going to overall make your team better. So I agree with that. But speaking of front office, I was thinking, and if I think back to this time, so last offseason, I'm sure you remember, everybody was really critical of the Cowboys front office. And I've been accused of, being like a, Stephen Jones stan account because I express my opinions that I'm in favor of a lot of stuff that they do. And one of the things I remember doing last year, I wanted them to kind of go back and reflect and it's like, well, what would you have wanted them to do different? last year after we lost it? Where did they, drop the ball? And I really didn't get any answers. Nobody really, even with the benefit of hindsight, really nothing. So I kind of want to do this again, Ravs, but I'm gonna put you on the spot. So let me ask you this. If you were Marty McFly and you could travel all the way back to February of last year, what would you try to get the Cowboys to do differently?
That's a really, really interesting question because there's a couple answers. I have two answers. One is nothing. I think we talked about this during the season. When you think about all the guys, the sort of savvy vets that the Cowboys brought in season, I'm thinking specifically about dudes like Jason Peters and T.Y. Hilton, but there may have been a couple others. If the Cowboys had brought those guys in or guys just like them in, during mini camps or whatever, everybody would have been like, "This is the greatest offseason ever. This team's awesome. This team's loaded." So I think that the Cowboys wisely just kind of waited until the market, they knew the market hadn't dried up for that profile dude, and they, as long as it was one of those guys in the market, they didn't stress about it because they knew that they were going to bring that guy in, and they were in the meantime giving extra reps to the cats who needed it, those youngsters who needed it. I mean, they're a young team. Got to give them those reps. So I think actually my first answer is nothing because I'm not sure what they could. I mean, they're not going to bring in a high price free agent. So what could they have done, right?
What a
So,
boring time traveler you are, Rabs.
but the other thing is this, and with the benefit of hindsight, I think the thing that we realize is that they misjudged, and maybe it's the information they were getting, but they pretty wildly misjudged the Michael Gallup recovery. Now, I know that it's one of those situations in which they threw assets at the wide receiver position. I know they got rid of Amari Cooper, and people are like, "Oh, you purposely got worse, and you didn't try to replace him." I think they did try to replace him. They didn't try to replace him with another sort of bona fide high price number one, because they had their in-house bona fide number one, not high priced yet, but he will be. But they had their own number one. They wanted to create space for CeeDee Lamb to be ascendant in year three, at which is when wide receivers typically do that, and he in fact did it and is an elite deluxe wide receiver, probably top five or six in the league. All right, great. I think that they really thought that Michael Gallup, not necessarily in week one, not necessarily during camp or anything like that. I think that they thought by about week five, Michael Gallup would be Michael Gallup again, and so they'd have the CeeDee Lamb that you and I saw in training camp in 2021, where he was the best player on the field. And they'd have a Michael Gallup who's that sort of physical presence who can jump out of the building, win a lot of contested catches. And then they had a fleet of tight ends. They had Tony Pollard as a kind of change up weapon, and then that for that third and fourth wide receiver, they could cobble that together with like James Washington. Maybe this draft pick would Jalen Tolbert would emerge, et cetera. And I think that where it hurt them is not necessarily in the plan, because in some ways the plan was right. Like if Michael Gallup was going to get back, I think we'd be looking at this year a lot differently. If he was anything like he was in 2019 and parts of 2020, this would be a much different conversation we'd be having right now. But he never did. And so the other thing that happened is Washington got hurt, and Jalen Tolbert never, it was just, he was, oh, it was too big for him. And so they threw a lot of assets and took a lot of chances, on the Carnival game, and they struck out on all of them. And so, you can, when you throw a lot of assets at something and one of those doesn't pan out, okay. But they were really unlucky. And that lack of luck combined with their misdiagnosis for whatever reason of Michael Gallup's return timetable, I think really hurt this team. And so, T.Y. Hilton, everyone's like, "Oh, T.Y. Hilton's he was brought on as a number three receiver. He was brought on to take over because Noah Brown's no good or who whatever." And I think he was brought in to help be the number two because Gallup was clearly not going to get better. So I don't know what I would have done differently, Dan, but I think having a better plan for Gallup is the thing that I think would have really made a huge and significant difference in this season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and I think that I think that the plan wasn't the problem either. I just think that the result,
Yeah.
and I.
Sometimes you just get unlucky. You know, I mean, it's not like they didn't do anything.
Right.
They might not have done the deluxe obvious thing, but the reality is, like, hiring, you know, bringing in a high-priced free agent doesn't guarantee that it's going to, you know, change your offense. It could help, but a lot of those guys are on the market for a reason. They're old, they're limited, you know, and so I don't know that if you're going to do that, you just keep Amari Cooper, and you just sort of stomach all the reasons they needed to get rid of him, which is that he was not practicing, and it was really hard to get him on the field in any way where he knew the game plan. And he was missing things, and he took plays off, and you know, I think there were a bunch of the reasons why they got rid of him. But you know, to bring another guy in who is going to be a surefire difference maker is going to cost you the same thing. I don't think they could do it financially. They couldn't get rid of Amari and do that.
Right. Now
And so,
that's a big
yeah.
point too. It's like you look back and because if I had the same question, the Amari thing is the only thing that I would struggle with, and I don't even know that I would pull the trigger on it too, because it's just what you said. That's, you know, 20 million in cap space. There's a lot you can do with that, and if you look at the Cowboys contingency plan, it wasn't a bad plan. It's just that all these things did not go well, and so the receiving group was not as strong as they thought it was going to be. And but at the same time, it was still pretty good and to light up Tampa Bay. So, you know, I mean, I don't think that it was like they just completely were, you know, just had nothing, you know, out there. I just think that if you're going to finger point or pick something, it's like there's something that you would like to have a different outcome. But again, like you said, I don't know that it was necessarily, you know, a bad plan on their part.
No, I think it was a misguided timetable in a way. I mean, I think, you know, all along, if you look at their behavior, it was pretty clear that they were just kind of banking on Gallup being back after about the first month of the season, and they were going to try to get to those first few games, get Gallup back, integrate him into the offense, and then start rolling. And it never
And
happened. It just never
I do
happened.
want to note that Michael Gallup signed a 5-year deal. So just to kind of give you a little perspective of the Cowboys' true investment in here, I mean they knew they were not expecting much in year one.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/box. That's klaviyo.com/box.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he's going to have to return to some semblance of the old Michael Gallup at some point in years 2 through 4 or 2 through 3 or whenever he actually, you know, is here for whatever part of the contract he's actually in Dallas, because otherwise it's going to be, you know, it's going to be one of those contracts where it's going to look really, really bad in hindsight. But to move from hindsight into foresight, I'd love for you to tell me now, as we look ahead on the horizon, and you can actually incorporate something you saw this season, but like, is there something in particular that was a concerning thing you saw this season, or something that, you know, you is a concern that you see going forward that you're really worried about? What's the area of concern that makes you a little bit anxious, makes you not be able to sleep at night? And how are you hoping it's addressed by the Cowboys?
That's a great question. Normally at this time is when I direct you to the Cowboys interior defensive line. But I don't have the same level of concern now. Before I thought Odighizuwa had a great year, and I think that Hankins and Watkins were just fantastic, as we talked about low cost free agent pickups. And so certainly I don't think that area was holding the team back, like they had in the past. It's really difficult to say. I guess it would probably stem around outside corner, opposite Trayvon. Like if there was, obviously my concerns about Bosman and Nashon have been well documented, and the Cowboys surprisingly, have been able to survive without Anthony Brown and Jordan Lewis, who's a slot guy though. Without, it hasn't been that terrible. But going forward, even with Deron Brand Bland having a great rookie season, I guess if I have a concern, it's that, the Cowboys, they don't got they're missing a starting outside cornerback, and I don't know how they're going to address that. I mean, maybe draft maybe, but I don't know if I have confidence in the players that are coming, that they have coming up. So I guess that's would be my answer. It's not, I don't, it's not like a real huge blinking light. Do you have one that's like just that's worrying you?
Yeah, I think I have some concerns about the offense. I feel like there's a couple things. One, they don't have enough dog. I think the defense has a bunch of dogs. They have a bunch of tough guys, a bunch of guys who don't mind mixing it up, a bunch of guys who like to hit, Trayvon Diggs being a notable exception. But and in some ways, his dislike of contact is all the more evident when he's in a huddle with a bunch of dudes who love it, right? Donovan Wilson and Jaron Kearse, and there's just a bunch of guys who do. They have a lot of speed and a lot of toughness, and I think that's really great. And it's gonna carry them. Where is that on offense? And I think that's to go back to Zeke. I mean, one of the things about Zeke is he's the one dude who provides that on offense, and without that. I'm not sure. I mean, who's that Ryan Jensen type on their offensive line? That sort of like marginally talented, but like scrapping dude who's going to fight everybody and, the trash can full of dirt type of dude. Who's the Dez Bryant or Michael Irvin on the outside who's wants to win at all costs and is willing to kill to catch a third down slant? I mean, CeeDee Lamb is a deluxe athlete and a surprisingly tough guy for how wiry he is. I mean, part of it, he's got this gigantic helmet because he's got so much hair. But part of it also is he's just a skinny dude. He's strong and sinewy, but he's skinny. He's very tough, but he's not a dog, He doesn't have that dog in him. He's not a tackle breaker. Like, the offense doesn't break tackles. And so they need more dog and they need more speed. And I think that, the guys I listed on defense have both of those things and bring both of those things in spades. And the offense doesn't have those things. They just don't. They need another breakaway back. They could use a tight end who really has like down the seam scary speed. They could use and they should definitely use at least one wide receiver who threatens safeties deep. Because the last 2 years, we've seen teams not only play shell coverage, but play a not particularly deep shell coverage. So they're just clogging the lanes at the end of the year. It feels like the last couple of years, by the time the year's over, Cowboys aren't getting anything deep. I mean, they did have that one long pass, I think, was it against the 49ers? Was it like a long pass to CD? It was a tremendous catch. But that's the exception, not the rule. They're not throwing deep often enough, and they're not throwing a lot of like, deeper passes down the seams. I mean, when's the last time that one of those worked? They're just not able to take advantage of it because they don't have the speed and they don't have a particularly strong pass blocking offensive line. So there's a lot to fix on the offense, but I think that the two things that I really want to see going forward are there have to be playmakers that threaten defenses with their speed and suddenness. And there have to be a couple of like just tough guys who would kill their grandmother to break a tackle.
Okay, so now that you kind of give us, you know, some descriptions of, I want to put you on the spot a little bit here. So I want you to, one of the things that I think about this team is I feel like that their roster is good enough now to where I don't think they have any like glaring, like we got to go after this in the draft. So to me, I feel like they can go a bunch of different directions, and maybe think, like wonder, where would I like to see them go after? So let me ask you this. If the Cowboys, again, can land a quality starter in this draft, like they've done so many times before, what position do you think most benefits them? I know you want dog.
But so let me see. Let me ask you this. Does it have to be in the draft, or can it be in free agency, or is it really, are we talking about round one, or just like, if I could upgrade one position?
Yeah, I just want, you get a quality starter. Let's just say I'm giving you first pick at a quality starter. It could be round one. It could be wherever the Cowboys draft. It don't matter.
The reason I ask that is because I think for me, it's a receiver who could take the top off the defense, but is also actually a good receiver. And if that guy's a dog, then great. Then all the better. But I think that the last 2 years, we've seen the limitations of this offense against good teams because they didn't have that threat. And so good teams, good schemes, teams with fast or big back sevens, they just shut the Cowboys down, and they've really struggled. I mean, yes, San Francisco, obviously, they struggled against the 49ers twice, but they struggled, you know, late last year, and they struggled later this year to do similar sorts of things. And so there's that. And then the reason I ask about free agency is because I don't know that you can get a first round receiver that's going to be an impact starter. It happens so rarely, A. And then B, I don't want them to spend a first round pick on an offensive lineman again. They keep doing that. They need to spend their first round pick elsewhere, unless a deluxe blue chip tackle happens to fall to them, because I think that is worth spending. But I would love to see a trash can full of dirt, mean, interior, like the kind of guy who was always hitting guys after the whistle, offensive lineman. I feel like they've got a lot of really nice guys on the offensive line. I mean, they're physical. Terrence Steele's a physical dude, but they need a Kevin Gogan, an Eric Williams type of guy. I think because they're just not mean enough on the offensive line, and they need to be. So those are the areas where I'm not worried about the defense. I think this defense is talented enough. I think that they have enough guys. If they re-sign Dono or that would really be helpful. Where they could do fine with Deron Bland, or, you know, if they get a first round corner, that's great. But I feel like the place where I need to see improvement if this team is going to make the next step is those two places, and suppose it's the offense.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different directions you can go. And to me, when you're talking about like the 26th pick, for example, I feel like, you know, I don't feel like there's such a great responsibility to take a premium position like you need to if you're picking top 15 or something. So I almost wonder, like, is this the year that you get one of those 350-pound, you know, monster nose tackles that's available, you know, that like New England likes to grab late in the first round or something that can totally just help change your day. If you package around Micah, Tank, and Osa, you know, are you suddenly going to have a formidable front four that's going to be a problem? So I'm kind of curious if maybe they might be, you know, deviate from the plan that they normally do. And I could see that would be one area where I would like to see them get stronger. And I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I like Hankins. I like Watkins. But, it'd be nice to, if the Cowboys draft stars that they landed, you know, actually was a big old nose that could, you know, shut you down and, totally change how teams have to go at you. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can see. I think you're right that later in the first round, the onus isn't as great on making sure you get someone at one of those sort of money five positions, mm-hmm. right? But I also would say that one contributing reason, frankly, for the Cowboys not being as good as some other teams, or you know, even though they drafted so well, not being as good as other teams, especially in, you know, 16 and 18, is that they did a tremendous job drafting, but they also did a tremendous job of drafting guys at positions that are not impact positions. You know, so they ended up getting guys who won battles regularly at positions where regularly winning battles means less. And so, yeah, fantastic. Fred Beard is fantastic. I loved him as a player, loved him as a dude, loved him in all his visual splendor. Everything about that dude I loved. But he's just a center.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but
it's great. It's really important. You have a strong center who can hold up nose guards and make the line calls, but there's a lot of fifth round guys who can do that pretty well. And I would rather have a fifth round guy who does that okay, like Tyler Biadasz, if I also have a first round wide receiver, a first round corner, first round defensive end, et cetera, where a guy who with his superior athleticism can make a difference at the positions where it influences what happens play to play. More. Yeah. And I think that the fact that the Cowboys were constantly winning at positions like linebacker and interior offensive line throughout the middle of the last decade, or toward the end of the last decade rather, meant that they weren't maximizing their talent. They weren't, because the positions where they were winning weren't the positions where winning doesn't mean as much. So I would like to see I don't want them to spend a lot of draft capital on either defensive tackle or interior offensive lineman, but I agree with you. If they can find that dude, I would love to see them get that dude. So this actually takes me to our last question, because you know, we're talking about their sort of drafting philosophy, et cetera. One of the things that I've talked about before is, you know, in comparing football to baseball, we've talked about how important it is, you know, for like strength of a baseball team is you look up the middle. Do they have a good catcher? How are their middle infielders, and how is their center fielder? And if you're strong up the middle, you can be strong even if you don't have great players, you know, at the corner positions. I want to take the same idea, but change it a little bit and talk about what I'm going to call the Cowboys spine and the spine of any franchise, because there's so much turnover in the NFL from, you know, year to year and across fairly short durations. I mean, you look at it, I don't know, when's the last time you looked at like the 2019 Cowboys and watched, you know, tape of the 2019 Cowboys? It's a completely different team. There's like four or five guys who are still here, but it's a completely different team. And someone will make a tackle and you're like, oh yeah, I forgot all about that dude. And that happens all the time. You watch it, you know, you watch a game from 3 or 4 years before, happens all the time. So the things that endure, however, the things that stay the same are the kind of brain trust and the quarterback. So what I want to do now is just kind of think about the Cowboys spine, because this is who the franchise is. So that starts with the owner, goes to the GM. I know that those are muddied in Dallas, but let's try to separate them out if we can, because I think they are separable. The head coach, the quarterback, who is, I mean, who speaks after games? It's the head coach and the quarterback. Those are the guys who are, you know, they're the ones who carry the briefcases. They're the ones who are the faces of the franchise. And then the last one I want to talk about is the offensive coordinator, because every you look at how many teams in the league are hiring hot young coaches. They're almost all offensive coordinators. And I think the idea is that you want an offensive coordinator as your head coach, so you have offensive continuity, so you can have the same system for your quarterback, et cetera. It's really important. So the news that the Cowboys are retaining Kellen Moore, I know a lot of people are disappointed in it. If you're disappointed in it, I'll tell you right now, you're just wrong, because he's really good. He's been doing a lot with some offensive personnel that has big holes, and I think he's a really good offensive mind. And I think even on top of that, you know, people talk, oh, it's a tired offense now. I think that is more than trumped by the fact that continuity means so much. As I was saying earlier, like these are guys who can continue to grow and learn nuances within the same offensive system. So let's talk about where the Cowboys are in terms of their spine, the vertebra, if you will, of this particular team. Let's start with the owner. So Jerry Jones, Let's rate each of them 1 to 5. You can talk about, you know, how you arrived at that particular rating. So how would you rate Jerry on a 1 to 5 as an owner?
Right. Well, as an owner. Okay. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that Jerry does as an owner that's really good, as far as like when you talk about marketing the team and everything. But if you're talking about on the football sense, which to me is somebody who's going to put people in the right places that are going to be successful. And I have to say that Jerry is probably fair. I mean, when you were saying this and I was like mentally stacking them, Jerry was at the bottom of everybody. But if we're just limiting him to an owner role, then I'm going to say he's I mean, we have to give the guy credit that despite the Cowboys not winning the Super Bowl in 27 years, the Cowboys are one of the more competitive teams over the last 2.5 decades. So yeah, I'm giving him a fair score. I think he is in the bottom of all of those before mentioned things.
I would agree. I think the ownership is the weakest part. I think it's the weakest part because of the philosophical change you were talking about earlier, which is that ultimately the owner will not enfranchise the head coach with the sort of supreme authority in the organization. And I think the owners who do that have tougher, stronger teams. I think there's a lack of accountability that's a significant part of the Cowboys culture. And you know, I mean, listen, I know they haven't been in the playoffs often enough. I think that the problem of the Cowboys is not that they choke in the playoffs, it's that they fail to get to the playoffs often enough, because eventually that will all even out. But I think one of the reasons they fail to get to the playoffs often enough, and one of the reasons why they don't do so well, is because there's little things that sort of bleed at their accountability, and I think that they tend to sniff themselves. The slightest sign of success, they don't do well. Like as Brian Broaddus has said many times, they don't do well. I remember the exact phrase he uses, but they don't do well when they're doing well. They actually really struggle when they don't know how to handle success. And I think that's because they don't, like, he's at his best as an owner. And by extension, the franchise is at its best when he's embarrassed, he's been humiliated by like a 5-12 season. They tend to have a really good offseason when that happens. But when they have a good season, the offseason tends to be a rest on your laurels offseason. I want my owner to push everybody to do their best like they have a 5-12 season every year. And he doesn't.
Yeah.
All right, how about the GM? Let's first establish who is the GM. If it's not, I know it's Jerry in name, but who is the de facto GM of the Dallas Cowboys?
Honestly, to me, when I hear GM and when I talk even front office, the names that come to mind is Stephen Jones and Will McClay, and I group them together because to me they're both equally, they do their job very well. I know people love Will McClay. And I don't know why you would. The Cowboys player personnel scouting department is just fantastic. Since Will has had a greater influence on this team, I mean, the Cowboys have done a fantastic job of rostering great players. And so I absolutely, everyone loves Will. People not so much with Steven, but I do like Steven. I do like his responsible approach. I think that one of the reasons that we can, you know, you said earlier, you feel optimistic about this upcoming year. You know what? You wouldn't feel that way if you were a Rams fan, you know, because, you know, you're dealing with, you know, consequences of past decisions, and the Cowboys don't mortgage their future and operate that way. So because of that, we do have new life for 2023. And I applaud the decisions they make. I think they did a fantastic job, like we talked about earlier, with some of the low cost plug and plays that they've done. So to me, I give them the 5 stars. I think Will McClay and Steven are fantastic. And even if we don't like their decisions early on, we tend to end up going back to them and say, you know what? They were right. So that was easy for me. And you put that at the top.
So how many stars are you giving the owner?
I give him 2.5 stars. I've given him in the middle.
Okay. I think I might give him two. But yeah. Okay. So I think I'll give Stephen and Will. And I think everything you've said is right. I think that there was a time there where there was a kind of like a triumvirate when Jason Garrett was still in favor and had been doing some things to persuade the Joneses to conduct business a little bit differently. And it really felt like it was Stephen and Jason and Will who were the kind of like, you know, I guess the sort of triumvirate of thinkers mm-hmm. who were, you know, really guiding this team, for want of a better term. Obviously Garrett's gone. I don't know. I get the sense that McCarthy, and I think to his credit, I think the team's actually better at drafting since Garrett hasn't been a part of the scouting process and his coaches haven't. But I don't think McCarthy's part of that. So we can talk about that one when we get to McCarthy. I don't know that I'd give them a 5, but I think I would give them a strong 4, 4.5. I think if when people complain about Stephen Jones, I think the important thing they need to do is remember what it was like before he became ascendant. Because if you remember before that, we had the Lacewell era, we had the sort of up and down of even some of the Parcells era, and you know, Jerry was changing philosophy year to year. This team had no core values in terms of roster building, what they believed in, what kind of team they wanted. Jerry would just try something new. Whatever New England did, then they'd try that. And then somebody else would be good and they'd try that. And so, you know, the thing that Stephen and Will have brought is a sort of philosophical and processual continuity that I think has been really important. And it's allowed the scouts to do the good job that they've been doing that you just pointed out. And I don't know how we can be so lucky that Will McClay has stayed as long at a position where he's not the GM. They must be throwing a lot of money at him or something.
You know, that's why we need to give the Jerry his 2.5 stars or 12, you know, I know why Will's there, because it's a family, you know, and McClay mm-hmm. loves mm-hmm. it. And they really have built a really strong bond in that organization too. And so, I mean, that's, and you know, McClay gets to do what he does. There's, you know, he just doesn't have the title, and he doesn't have the title.
Yeah, he's a GM, and I think everybody in the league recognizes that he is and respects him as if he were. Mm-hmm. You know, you know, even in the last few years, he's been a lot more on the kind of like media circuit, and so he's a lot more front and center now than he was when he first started. So that's cool too, and it's probably frankly part of the negotiating process is to give him more of those kind of public appearances so that he is on people's radar. So let's, I agree. I think that they're much stronger than the owner. And that whatever part of Stephen is the owner, I would lump in with Jerry, because I do get the sense that he kowtows to Jerry in terms of the things that I think are weak about their ownership, the sort of lack of accountability and the kind of country clubbish culture that they'd rather engender. So that they don't personally have to be held accountable for anything. So let's switch our gears here. How about the head coach? Where would you put our head coach?
I'm going to give our head coach a three stars. He's going to be slightly above Jerry, and he'll be second to last. And I want to say this, that I do think a lot of Mike McCarthy. I think that you've voiced this on Twitter too, and I know where you stand. You stand a little different. You're a little bit more approving of McCarthy than I am, but you make great points, and I think it's one of the biggest points is it's so hard to work in this organization, and you need a special kind of head coach. And I do think that Mike McCarthy brings a lot of those traits that are workable with this type of with the Joneses, basically. So I think that McCarthy, and in this, you know, like maybe he will get better. We talked about this earlier. It's like maybe as he builds up trust, some of his decisions will hold more power, and they'll be less Jonesy. But to me, still McCarthy is too much of a yes man. He's, you know, I feel like this whole season he's kind of lived a little bit in a sense of like false security and sense of like, I don't hear him saying like it's going to be tough. Like this, you know, we're a good football team. I believe in our guys, but let's be real. It's going to be hard. There's some tough, really good team. He always like, you know, had this sense of confidence about him that just like I felt like it just to me, they just seemed like they might have been a little unprepared because they didn't fully grasp, you know, their own ability and their own shortcomings to be able to fix those things and play at a high level. So I feel like McCarthy's fine. I don't want him replaced. I don't think that he's better than Jason Garrett. I know people do think so. I don't think so. I think.
Do you think he's worse?
No, I don't think he's. I don't think he's worse. I mean, I think he's. Right now, I think he's slightly worse right now because he doesn't have much pull as far as being able to get the Joneses to convince them. And this is, you know, like Jason Garrett, and people wonder this about, we'll get to Kellen Moore in a minute. People like wonder why would people want him as a head coach, you know, or something, like he doesn't even look like he'd be a good head coach. I mean, but Kellen, like Jason before him, is one of those guys that he walks in the room and immediately people know that he's the smartest guy in the room. And when you have that ability to communicate and keep your guys focused on the task at hand, and you're always thinking about things you can control and not living on these other, making these excuses and dwelling on this and that and blaming officiating, and just like, you know, you don't get rattled by any of that. You always have yourself thinking about, you know, where your mind should be. And that's what I really loved about Jason Garrett. I don't think McCarthy's has that, but I do think that he's has experience and he does a great job of kind of meshing everything together. I think, I love our coordinators. I think our coordinators are fantastic and and I love our scouting department. I think if you look at all these pieces, McCarthy does a good job of like holding everything together. And I think there's a short list of coaches really to be that I would even want to coach the Dallas Cowboys, whether they're great coaches or not, as far as in a vacuum. But and McCarthy's fine. McCarthy would be one of those names. I mean, he's not a bad coach, and he works with the Joneses fine. I don't think he really gives the Cowboys like anything special that elevates them. I mean, I think here we are again. We didn't make it past the divisional round. I don't think it's because McCarthy's bad, but I also don't think it was because Jason Garrett was bad. But I don't think there's nothing I see him like. He's no Jimmy Johnson or Bill Parcells in the sense of like he gives this team an edge. So to me, I'm giving him a passing grade. He gets a 3 stars, and you know he's one spot above Jerry Jones.
I think that's all. I think that's all fair. He's a dopey looking fat guy, and so those kind of guys are never going to get respect in the same way that someone
people
who comes
love
across,
those guys.
As you said,
they love dopey fat guys.
I don't think they respect them though. They like them because they're fun to drink beer with. I think he doesn't get the credit for being smart that he probably deserves because he doesn't come across that way. He's probably a lot smarter than his public presentation.
He's more enjoyable to listen to than Jason Garrett. I'll say that. Well, I mean, not that that means.
I mean,
anything.
I'll tell you what. Certainly in press conferences, maybe not. You know, outside of press conferences or like on walk-offs, you know, those kind of things where Garrett was actually at his best. I will say that I was really. When we had John Machota on a couple, 3 weeks ago, it was really interesting to listen to him talk because he was saying that he really loves talking to McCarthy and that McCarthy's, you know, a very voluble, really pleasant guy. And he really enjoys, especially those sort of walk-offs where the cameras aren't rolling at the end of pressers with McCarthy and things like that. So, I mean, I think part of it is it's the scrutiny of the Dallas Cowboys and being the head coach and having to go out and be the mouthpiece for the organization. At the same time, you know, Jerry, who's going to be drunk half the time, is saying something to contradict what you're doing. The press is going to jump on it. And half the time they're like, did you hear Jerry say that? And he's like, no, because I was like running meetings. I don't know what the hell Jerry said. And you know, the press is always looking to try to find something you said that's different. And it's just easier not to say anything. And so they're going about not giving you anything very differently. I'll just reiterate quickly a couple of things I've said about McCarthy before, which is that I think one of the advantages he has vis-a-vis this particular organization is that he is not, in fact, the son of a scout who used to scout for the Cowboys. His part of the reason he was brought in was not to be a scout or because he has that scouting ability. That was not a value add that he brought to the hire. And I think that that's actually helped clear the waters around scouting. I think that Garrett and by extension, then of course, his scouting, rather his coaching staff really muddied things. And that's one of the things that McClay worked really hard to clarify. I don't know they need to work that hard to clarify it anywhere, because I get the sense that McCarthy just kind of says, hey, you guys scout, we coach, let's do it. I do know that John Owning brought back a tweet from earlier, I think during training camp, when Brian Broaddus let out a little nugget where he was talking about how Joe Philbin and the assistant offensive line coach weren't behind the Tyler Smith drafting. They didn't want him. And so certainly think like there's a sense that maybe there's more of a division between the scouts and the coaches now and there was, but I think that's actually a good thing. I think that and as long as McCarthy's not going to you know, grumble about it, which I don't think he is, I think that's a good thing. I think he's an experienced coach. He knows what he's doing. I think he's absolutely right in several things that are key parts of his strategy, which are the early games don't matter. Preseason games don't matter. Everything you're doing, all the decisions you're making are so that you can be at your best in the playoffs at the very end of the season. There's an assumption built into that, which is that we're going to be there, which I think is good. It's a good assumption to have. And I think that, you know, he's not going to do some of the things that we want to do, which is that for the team to kill itself to try to win a division championship, right, if that means that they won't be as ready as they could be. Now, would I have liked them to be playing better at the end of the season in the last couple of years? Absolutely. Something's happened. They just get tired at the end of the year. But they're generally pretty healthy. I mean, they've had pretty good health going into those games, other than, you know, guys who are out for the year. But like in terms of nicks and dings and guys who are really important, they do a good job of resting them. So he tracks all that really well. I think he's got a pretty good handle on the bigger picture, which I really appreciate. And I'm not sure Garrett always had. And I'll say this. He's 24 and 5, and I know it's a good team, but he might be one of those guys who's, you know, clever like a fox, because he's got back-to-back 12 win seasons for the Cowboys for the first time since Barry Switzer was the coach, you know, and that's impressive. Nobody else has come close to that.
I think I might give him
another point, but I also recognize, you know, his limitations, just in the sense that he's not a dynamic thinker, right? He's not going to bring an offensive concept that's going to be revolutionary, that kind of thing. And he's also not the kind of guy who is going to strike fear into the players so that they perform better. And I'm not sure that kind of coach can even succeed in the NFL anymore, that Johnson and Parcells guy. But one of the reasons all those teams were tough is they were scared to death of their head coach. And I'm not sure the Cowboys ownership ever wants to hire that kind of guy, but I'm not sure that kind of guy either A, exists, or B, would even succeed in today's NFL. Let's move on. Let's move on to the quarterback, and then we can talk about the offensive coordinator. The next guy, I think, in the sort of hierarchy in this spine is the quarterback. He is the face of the franchise for almost every franchise. We did talk about Dak in the wake of the San Francisco loss. What do you think about Dak overall?
Yeah, I'm actually.
How many stars are you giving this cat?
I'm doing the Dak and Kellen together, because to me.
Oh, you are.
Because they're a tie to me. I'm giving them, you know, 4 stars, and I think both of them are very good at their job. I feel like the Cowboy fans are a little bit like polarized on, you either like love Dak or you think Kellen's good, or you think Dak's good. I don't really think you think both. I think it's usually you're blaming the one or the other if you're a team Dak or team Kellen. To me, I think that's silly, and I view them the same in the sense of they're really good. They're not perfect. They're better than the great majority of the league. The defense is going to win sometimes, but overall, you have to feel really good about what the Cowboys have in each of them. I think the Cowboys have, you know, I would say they're in the 25 percentile, top 25 percentile, both in coordinator and quarterback.
Most definitely.
Yeah, and yes. I don't think that's really up for debate. And so I think Kellen does a great job. I think if you watch the All 22 and you watch the Kurt Warner stuff, and you see, you know, you'll see that there's times where D'Amico Ryan made the better play, you know, and that's going to happen because he's pretty good too. But there's also a lot of times where Kellen does some great job with the spacing. You see some misdirection and like he just really annihilated Tampa Bay. And so I think Kellen Moore is one of the bright minds. I don't know what his full potential is. I don't know if he's good head coach material. I just think he's does a great job as a coordinator. I think the Cowboys had some shortcomings offensively with just talent, and he worked around them really well. If you look at his body of work, it speaks for itself because the Cowboys offense is constantly producing, and you know when they're running on firing all cylinders, they're just one of the best in the league. And that's since Kellen Moore has taken over, and that was even Garrett's last year, and they've been really good. And Dak too. I know everyone's kind of down on Dak with, you know, he had a tough finish to the year. And I do want to say, when you look back over the season, and you even mentioned 2019, like that was a good team, and you're absolutely right. And I think Prescott hurt his shoulder, you know, down the stretch too. But I think if you take a close look and you see Prescott hurts his shoulder, Prescott hurts his calf, you know, or, you know, Prescott, there's things that happen with Dak that does affect his performance. I do think he's a great quarterback, but I do think that he's had some down moments. And no part of me wants to try to move on or look for something else because that's silly to me. So both those guys, I give them 4 stars, and they're tied for second best, you know, behind the front office of, you know, McClay and Jones. To me, that's where I see those guys. What about you?
I think the Cowboys, year in and year out, since both of them have been in the respective positions that we're talking about, have been a top five offense every year, except for 2020 when Dak was out, obviously, right? But even then, like, it took a while, but they started getting the offense humming toward the end. The last month or so, 5-6 weeks of the season, they were scoring points in bunches. They were doing pretty well. And they were certainly scoring in bunches before Dak got hurt. So, you know, when Dak and Kellen have both been together and Dak's been on the field, this offense has been, I think, better than a top five offense regularly, consistently. And I will submit this, and this is something you just touched on, and I couldn't give you enough. You speak, brothers, about this one. You know, you keep talking, man, because I think this is right, which is that I think he's done a lot with some real offensive limitations. I think he's had some pretty big limitations on the offensive line on his time he's here, and frankly, with his offensive line coach in the time he's been here. I think he's had a couple of different wide receiver rooms that were very, very limited. I think he's done a tremendous job of scheming and getting guys open and coming up with finding weaknesses and, you know, helping Dak to exploit them. I think, you know, anybody who thinks that they're not a good pair and that they, you know, doesn't really understand what their respective roles is, I think. And, you know, they had trouble against San Francisco. That's the best defense in the league, and they were down to one playmaker. It's pretty easy. And you and I could have schemed to take CeeDee Lamb out of the game with that defense, because that defense can generate pressure with 4. I mean, come on. There's 7 guys back there. You put 2 of them on CeeDee. You still have 5 for everybody else. It's easy peasy. It's so easy. So I will say this. I think there is a cap on what Kellen can do, and this may actually put a cap on what Dak can do too. So the other thing that I learned, and I learn it every time I watch them play, but the thing I learned from this, the 49ers game, is that Shanahan's system is more integrated. It's a system. His offensive system is a system. There's a reason why above all the fact that they have tremendous personnel, but there's a reason why that offense is scoring in bunches with a rookie quarterback. It's because the system and the scheme is so good. And in particular, everything looks the same. I mean, everything's confusing, but everything looks the same. So like runs and passes look the same. The run game and the pass game are seamlessly integrated. So you get the same looks, you get a lot of the same, you know, the defense is seeing the same thing, doesn't know which of those two it is, but also the offense gets to practice a lot of the same concepts, the beginning of plays, et cetera. right? So there's it helps the offense and confuses the defense. They use a lot of motion, et cetera. And I think that the way that he schemes his passing game, in part because it is more seamlessly integrated with the running game, is what creates these guys who are wide open, right? Because he's able to pull guys out of zones because of the motion and pull guys out of zones because of the power of the 49ers run game that I think Kellen can't always do because, and this is the thing about Kellen Moore's offense, people have said it, I've repeated it because I think it's a useful thing to think about. It's a collection of plays and it's not a scheme. And so everyone's always talking about, can't Kellen scheme these guys open? I think, yeah, sometimes you can. But against a really good defense that's studied well and is well taught by their coaches in the week before they play the Cowboys, that doesn't work as well. Right. So what works really well is you've been taught that this is your key, but guess what? It's the same key if it's an off tackle run versus if it's a deep pass across the middle, you know. And so that can be really and we see the same motion on you know, six or seven different looks, and sometimes there's a jet sweep and sometimes it's just there to create a little bit of space, but that space is going to be deadly. I think there's little things like that Shanahan's system allows for, or creates rather, that Kellen Moore's system doesn't, because it's not a system. And so people are talking about, like, you know, for a guy like Dak, how many times or how many ways can you get or provide him with an easy button? And the thing about Brock Purdy is there's a lot of plays every game where he's given an easy button because the scheme is so sound. And I don't know that Kellen Moore's system can do that, particularly against good defenses, in the same way. And so that's why I think that I think I like both of them a lot, but I do think that's part of the reason why they tend to do well against bad teams and struggle against good teams, is because good teams can prepare for what they do, because there are different keys for the run versus the pass. I mean, there's like slight little things that they do differently, the way they set those up. They're not seamlessly integrated in quite the same way. I mean, yes, there are looks that off the same thing and all that, but it's not as completely integrated in the same way. And so against good teams, it's harder for Dak than it is for Brock Purdy.
Yeah.
So I mean, listen, that said, I still think they're both tremendous. And I think both of them have done heroic work in seasons like 2019, parts of it, because 2018 was still Linehan, right? 2019, 2020 in particular for Kellen, and this year with these, you know, there's position rooms where you go in there and you're like, wow. This is a big limitation that this guy has to scheme around, and he's done a great job of it. Listen, this offensive line, for all of the things that they did well this year, was at or near the bottom of the league in pass block win rate. They were not a good passing, by any stretch of the imagination, a good pass blocking offensive line. But he found a way to generate a lot of passing yards. He found a lot of way to keep Dak up. So, I mean, that's a deadly combination. I mean, like, just imagine if you had Clint Sterner or Chad Hutchinson and you had Bruce Coslett with those same situations. These guys would be scoring 7 points a game.
Yeah, I don't want to imagine that, no.
But I'm just saying, like, we need to give both of them some credit for finding ways to overcome that. I mean, you're talking about Dak can't carry a team or can't make guys better. Are you kidding me? He had one of the worst pass-blocking offensive lines in the game. And they couldn't run block the last month and a half.
Yeah.
And they still scored 30.
Yeah.
Get out of here with that.
No.
Those guys were incredible.
No, I agree. Those guys are a fantastic duo, and I'm glad we have them in Dallas. And you know what? And speaking of fantastic duos, Rabs.
Oh, nicely done.
That is all we have time for today. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the Blogging the Boys Podcast Network. Leave us a rating, write a review. Wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iTunes, or Stitcher, tell us what you think, anything you would like us to do differently to improve your podcast listening experience. And if you ever want to talk to us about anything at all, any Cowboys hot topics or changes you think are coming, you know, hit us up on Twitter. I'm at DannyPhantom24, and Rabs is at Rabble Rouser, spelled RABBLEROUSR. And don't forget to check out all the great podcasts throughout the entire week. Every day we got something new for you. Tomorrow we'll have the World's Team with Meg Murray and Paul Stewart, so make sure to check that out. But that's all we have for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay happy, stay true to the silver and blue, and we will catch you later.
If anybody wants these donuts, go ahead, take them home.